Hello and welcome back, listeners, to the season 3 premiere of the Dark Matter Magazine podcast. This, as always, is an audio presentation of the short fiction, interviews, and features you'll find in the issues of Dark Matter Magazine. We strive to curate the best and darkest of sci-fi and horror from both new and established voices. And this podcast is no different. Listener discretion is advised. For more stories like this upcoming episode, you can find the complete collection of our archived issues, as well as Dark Matter Inc.'s published and upcoming novels at darkmattermagazine.shop. And now, to today's presentation. A special peek from inside Dark Matter Inc.'s Human Monsters anthology, with an author interview following the story. Barry and Lich, written by Stephen S. Schreffler, performed by Kira Nova, sound designed and edited by Ali Nova, executive produced by Phil McLaughlin.
You know the van. It's one of those vans from like the 80s. Three wolves howling at the moon, painted in photographic detail along the side. Bumper sticker mosaic plastered over the rear doors, Jesus Christ bobblehead on the dash, rattles like a grocery cart, and the whole rig drifts into the night. I bet you could guess just who might be driving it, too. Big fella for a high schooler. Mop head for hair, sleeveless acid-washed jean jacket. It's decorated like a five-star general's uniform. But instead of purple hearts and stars of valor, it's all pins and buttons that say things like, "Punk you! No smoking," and "Hertz donut." Safety pin between the shoulders, a Misfits patch. Neurosis t-shirt under that. An open can of Olympia between his wide thighs. And yeah, those are leather pants. That's Barry. He works at Guitar Center. Can you imagine the type of accomplice Barry might patter around with? There in the sheepskin passenger seat is a guy as skinny as Barry is rotund, tall as Barry is squat. He's got the build of a telephone pole, wires for arms floating outside a Punisher t-shirt that could fit a sumo wrestler. Their Dungeons & Dragons group one time called him a lich, and so that's who he is. There, rolling down the window, ripping a joint like he was born for it. So, Lich, he manages the drum section at Guitar Center. They don't know it yet, no one does, but tonight they'll commit multiple homicides. 5 high school girls and 3 high school boys. Schoolmates. These boys, always ready to bring a good time. Good enough to wash out all the bad ones. I mean, how do you think a van like that? Barry at the helm, Lich is my co-pilot. How do you think a van like that is handling the winding roads up Pine Mountain to a lonely cabin in the middle of nowhere on a late summer night? Yeah, not pretty, is it? Tom Sawyer is blasting through the premium sound system, the one thing Barry was always dropping his paychecks on aside from dank weed and piss beer. Hell, though, they're having fun. They're all jacked on THC and alcohol and good vibes, baby. They're actually not bad kids. Lich rolls a hell of a spliff, and he'll walk you through Rush's 2112 with a scholar's intellect if you have a free Friday night. Barry can play Stairway to Heaven on his dad's Gibson SG perfectly. Close your eyes and it's Jimmy Page in the flesh. They have a good, honest time. They don't know they're about to commit multiple homicides. You could argue it's not their fault, anyway. Like I said, it's not like they planned on this. They're just committed. Believe in the sanctity of something like playing a role. Look, I know that sounds weird, but hear me out. Barry and Lich, they're 3 years deep into a Dungeons & Dragons campaign. Should be at home with their fellow social outcasts slinging D20s, talking in character. One time, Barry, or should I say Bloodzorg the Dismemberer, got so into the session he shouted in his best orcish and pulled out a real sword no one even knew he had, and I kid you not, cleaved the entire fucking table in half. Dice went flying, papers fluttering like scattered pigeons, beer and Mountain Dew dousing everything. Everyone went nuts. Lich, or should I say, Priestess of Carnage, held a staff high and declared this sacred ground. So point is, they come there ready to take on a role. Bloodzorg the Dismemberer. Barry knew the role well. Priestess of Carnage. Lich embodied the role. Plus, they work retail. Gotta be at the ready, know their stuff, help their customer do stupid shit like play Smoke on the Water through a solid-state redline PV amp, or hit every crash in the soundproof cymbal room. If you walked into that guitar center, man, I'm telling you, they would hook you up. So even there, they can play the role of Guitar Center corporate payrolled certified employee. Obviously, there's high school, where they play another role. The sufferers of nasty looks. The butts of the jokes. Two punchlines walking. Getting the shit kicked out of them when the teachers aren't around, or sometimes worse than that. Smoking joints by the dumpsters, skipping school, pretending like they're so despised because they're above all this high school bullshit. No, not outside it. Above it. The weirdos. They got that role down to a T. Can't forget about their respective roles at home. Lich chopping hot dogs in a slurry of ketchup for his younger brother and sister. Sure to save a squeeze of ketchup for himself, even though he knows there won't be a hot dog to go with it. Their dad's long gone, but their mom's only gone for a few nights or weeks here and there. Lich's brother and sister start kindergarten next year, which means they'll learn for the first time what it's like to have lunch every day. And not just the lunch that Lich stashed from school, pulled away from a sweaty JanSport to their applause and laughter. Like it really might be the surprise Lich assures them it will be. He announces in a British accent that dinner is served. Here's the finest steak money could buy, he tells them as he unwraps a tray full of three kinds of slop. Good big brother. He plays the role as best as he can. Barry is another kid with daddy issues. Those are his words, often followed by a hearty har. He jokes with Lich about how maybe their dads ran off to the same place. Beer heaven. Or something. Burning in hell, maybe. Barry Sr. burning in booze hell for all eternity. In the meantime, there's this man-shaped void in Barry's house, and his mom spends just about every other week trying out a new jigsaw for the empty slot. Some men are too nice for mom. They never last long. Some are the right kind of mean. They laugh at Barry, toss him a $5 bill when they need the house to just them and Barry's mom. Then there were the real bad men. Those guys, they would say things about Barry's mom he'd rather not know. What she likes, what she looks like and feels like down there, and what they do about it. Real bad men. Usually, Barry ends up knocked out and bloodied by them. Having charged with white-knuckled fists and a lung full of hate, his naked mom screaming in the background. Barry wasn't the jigsaw on nights like that. But maybe one day he would be. Until then, he'll play out the role. The role they imagine. Or the role assigned. Or the coveted role. But we're here to see them play out a brand new role they never planned on. I mean, here's what happened, why they're on Pine Mountain Road. The girls, they thought it would be just the funniest thing ever to invite our boys to this little cabin weekend. Ha ha. Good jokes and big laughs. Imagine girls like that inviting Barry and Lich to something like a cabin getaway where there'd be no adults. How excited these boys were about joining them. They nearly convinced Lich that they were ready for that masterclass on Rush. Bring his vinyl along. Like that's what this was about. But no, they gave Barry and Lich the wrong address. Which had our boys standing at the wrong house, six-pack in each hand, a sandwich baggie of weed in their pockets. The address was Mr. Comley's, school principal. So that was an awkward interaction. Ha ha. Good one. It's Friday night and Mr. Comley already had plans for Monday morning. See me in my office, he'd said as he tightened his bathrobe. So there's a little bit of a fuck the man vibe in the van tonight as they pull into the gravel driveway up to the actual cabin these girls and boys are at. The end of the world is due Monday morning. Better make the most of the weekend. Locating the cabin had been easy. They both knew that photos would show up on social media soon enough, and they also knew that at least Amber had geolocation tagging turned on by default. This wasn't the first time Barry and Litch had been just oh-so-curious about where Amber might be on a given Friday. They're pulling on a couple of rubber masks they grabbed at Spirit Halloween. It was the first stop after Mr. Comley's, after hatching a plan about how they could get back at the girls, with a prank of their own. Really vile masks, too. Like, have you been in a Spirit Halloween lately? Shit would make Michael Myers blush. Barry had grabbed his Bloodzorg sword on the way out. Litch? Oh god, Litch. Man, I love that guy. He'll tell you about how Rush just commits to every song, how that's what makes the absurdity of it actually work. So, Litch is committed to this prank. He's got an actual chainsaw he found in the garage. How funny is that? Get it running, get it screaming with gas-powered rage when he rips that pull cord. The plan is this. Peek in some windows, tap on the glass with the sword, get that chainsaw roaring. Work up a good scare. Who's laughing now? Renegotiate the van down Pine Mountain Road. Innocent enough. No harm, no foul. No one gets hurt over a joke, do they? Barry and Litch know that better than anyone. Barry shuts off the headlights as the van crunches to a slow stop in the gravel driveway. There's like 10 cars out front, and Barry recognizes Chet's Pontiac Trans Am. He knows that car because he covets the thing. Chet. God. Chet is the quarterback for the Owls, the school's football team. Of course he and his cronies got the real invite. If Barry had to guess, linebacker Patrick was there. Probably Chet's wide receiver George, too. Good, Barry thinks. The more the merrier. He and Litch exchange a glance like they know without a word spoken that this has also become about humiliating Chet, Patrick, and George in front of the ladies. Just as Chet, Patrick, and George have often done to Barry and Litch. Turn the tables. So, there's 5 ladies, like I said. Amber, Jenny, Kat, Steph, and Denise. A mix of the cheerleading squad and Denise, captain of the high school girls' volleyball team. All legs, as far as Barry and Litch are concerned. Sorry, they're in high school, and can't avoid how thoughts about the opposite sex pass through a cheesecloth filter of hormones. They're about to find out the thrill, the power that comes with making said opposite sex scream for their lives, and they might have some more thoughts bouncing around by the time this is over. So, sorry again. Just hang in there because it's about to get out of hand. Here's how it starts. They do the peeking, the tapping of sword on glass, but see the cabin is empty. Regarding each other through the gruesome rubber visage and pencil troll hair, they think to each other, now what? And then the lodgepole pines towering over them echo back the laughter of 5 high school girls and 3 high school boys. A glance towards the pine tops reveals the orange flicker of firelight. Sounds like the party's out back. They make their way around the cabin, to where everyone is. They're improvising now, and Litch will tell you actually, that's what made Rush great. Improvise, feel the crowd, jam it out. Commit. Play the role. On the count of 1, 2, 3, 4, Litch revs the chainsaw. Amber, Jenny, Kat, Steph, and Denise scream immediately. I mean, right away. Ha ha. What a joke. Now Chet, QB and captain of the Owls, is shouting in the darkness where Lich is hiding.
Hey, who the fuck is there?
He shouts over the rumbling chainsaw. Chet's a Mormon. He says fuck, like he might get in trouble for it.
Ooh, I'm so scared.
Barry whispers to Lich through his rubber mask, and they laugh together. God, it's just too good being on this side of it. Patrick and George stand at attention on either side of Chet like they can take on anything. That's about how it goes for the next whatever minutes. Barry and Lich rev the chainsaw or hack at a tree somewhere in the woods, run around to some other area, do the same thing. Chet and the football goons puff up their chests and shout about all the things they'll do if they catch them. The girls scream. Oh, look. Chet has taken off his shirt. How precious. So, there we go. Mission accomplished for Barry and Lich. Right? Came out, scared everyone, good times had. The plan, then, was to leave. Maybe. Or hell, maybe it's just a good time that can get better. You know Barry and Lich, they're down for that. So maybe they can come out of the darkness, unmask themselves, everyone shares a laugh. Barry says as much all in one look through his cheap Halloween mask. Lich maybe agrees. Hard to tell because, seriously, these masks are nasty as all hell. It's ludicrous, but the boys, they feel like this is what Chet, Patrick, and George must feel like. Powerful. Well-equipped. Barry makes his way towards a shed at the edge of the firelight. Like that good time can indeed get better. Like a shared laugh is sure to follow. Why shouldn't it? It's high school. It sucks. It's awesome. It's whatever you make of it, as far as Barry and Lich are concerned. Maybe this can be an inside joke they share. And maybe it'll be enough to forget all the other stuff, like sending Barry and Lich to Mr. Comley's. Or the worst stuff. Chase the moment here, boys. Commit to it. Play the role. But then, about the time they're feeling all silly about it, Amber says something. Says something that turns the whole night the wrong way.
I bet it's Barry and his stupid friend. Did you guys see the look on their faces when we invited them?
Everyone laughs. Ha ha. Good joke.
Oh my god, I know.
Says Kat. Steph shudders.
Those guys give me the creeps. They're so gross.
They all start talking shit. Saying some hurtful things. Things like,
I hate them so much. Ew, they smell like BO all the time. I bet they get all their clothes from the thrift store. So pathetic.
Barry's kind of leaning around the back of the shed, and he remembers hearing his mom's last boyfriend once say something like that. Soaked in cigarettes and Olympia beer, calling Barry pathetic. Pathetic. Some words just hit harder to some people. That's Barry's word. Pathetic. It's a part of who he is. Echoing around between his ears even on the best of Friday nights. Barry is gripping Bloodzorg's sword ever more tightly. Pathetic is a word that smells like alcohol, like rotten teeth and stale camel reds. Feels like a busted nose, spitting teeth, blurry in one eye for a week. Weighs a ton. He's breathing heavily, seeing motes wink in and out of his periphery. Pathetic is his missing dad's reason for going AWOL. Pathetic is what all the men in line outside his mom's bedroom have to say about it. Pathetic is Barry's own mom giving her first-hand account of why there's a line and why Barry can't ever do anything about it. His jaw tightens. Back stiffens. Breath hot and loud in his mask. Lich feels that sting too. He glances down at his oversized Punisher t-shirt that he indeed got from the thrift store. He was the only one long enough to cover his wiry torso. His mom takes him and the twins there once every few months, uses some of the money they got from returning cans to get them new clothes. How pathetic he needs to make himself to get his brother and sister to eat, dancing like a butler. How pathetic he felt looking up Amber's geotag again. Pathetic is thinking even for a moment they could pull a prank and maybe go out and have a laugh with some new friends about it. The more pathetic they feel, the heavier the sword gets. Pathetic is all that gasoline sloshing around in the chainsaw. Then Kat kicks off a whole new conversation about all the things they would prefer over fucking Barry and Lich. Stuff like, pass up a briefcase full of $1 million, shoot their own PTA moms, eat dog poop for the rest of their lives. Barry and Lich feel the fun of a Friday night leeching from them. They feel like they're losing again. Not the plan. And when Jenny says she'd rather have all her arms and legs and her very head cut off, and the girls each agree, Barry looks at Lich. He can only see wet eyes through the cheap Halloween mask. He thinks, well, let's just see about that.
Fucking losers.
Chet's trying on the F-word again, and it doesn't land any better than the last time. He's on his way to the shed to
take a pass,
which he announces like it's foreplay or something. Of course, his cronies Patrick and George need to piss at that moment too. Like they're thinking, dick's out over here. They shout while pissing, as if that might be tantalizing to the girls. They end up farting distance from Barry and Lich. Amazing they don't see the boys, but they've stopped caring because they've got the world on a string. They're close enough that both Barry and Lich can feel the delicate pinprick of piss droplets on their skin. Hear it on their weapons. Patrick recalls
this one time
about Lich. And then Lich is back in a memory he tries as best as he can to forget. Goes like this. Surrounded by muscular, naked high school boys in the locker room, Chet, Patrick, and George. Lich gets hard, tries to hide it. They see it. They laugh.
Wanna suck my dick, don't you?
Now he's getting pushed down. Now they've got him in some kind of wrestling pin and they're trying to pry open his mouth. The three friends all laugh at the memory, laugh like it happened just yesterday. Ha, ha. Lich remembers, too. He can still hear his own screams from that day in his head, and he needs something to drown them out, something louder. He rips the pull cord, and the chainsaw roars. That should do it. It's like a war trumpet to Lich, fills his veins with gasoline. He brings the chainsaw down on Patrick's swiveling head with all the strength he couldn't muster that one morning on the wet tile floor of the locker room. And when it connects, Lich keeps going, dragging it through that entire memory until the chain is all gristle and bone and hair, and the two halves of what used to be Patrick fall on either side of Lich. There's no stopping now. For the rest of the night, he's got Neil Peart's Birmingham 88 XYZ drum solo playing in his brain, start to finish, on repeat. Lich steps through both sides of Patrick like the curtains have opened, covered in the refreshing spray of viscera from his chainsaw. He's breathing maniacally when he spots Chet. The QB is trembling, pale, shocked. Just like you would be, had you watched that drum solo. Lich wonders what happens when you stab with a chainsaw. Intends to find out. Then there's Barry watching this. First, he's as shocked as anyone. Then, the warm splatter of Patrick's insides fleck across his mask, His wide-open mouth curls into a slow, wide-open smile, helped along by the gentle nudge of a gradually nodding head. When both parts of Patrick land, Barry gets it. He's heard Lich's masterclass on Rush. Commit. Play the role. What else can a good friend like Barry do but help? Barry leaps into the air, higher than he's ever leapt before, eyes red with blood rage, Bloodzorg's sword gripped in both hands overhead. He howls like a wolf, like the three wolves on the van, and pulls the sword down upon George. He chops and chops and chops, all in perfect rhythm, a 4-4 beat to match the song in his mind. Good vibrations, a la Beach Boys. They're both covered in gore when Denise shows up to see what's the matter. Denise, why did you do that? Who do you think is the matter? That's a chorus of power tools and death throes by the shed. Don't go there. What can someone like Denise do about it? But she doesn't think, just goes, which means she's next. Has to be. A mask, Barry and Lich and their tools of reckoning is what's the matter, Denise. All the parts around them that used to belong to three high school boys. And then she tries way too late to say something nice. But all Barry can hear is the conversation by the fire, agreeing that she'd rather have her head chopped off than even kiss him. So he grabs a fistful of hair, aims her gaze at the night sky, and obliges. They didn't plan on this, back in the van, outside Mr. Comley's. It's just sort of happening. Like it needs to. Nothing pathetic about this. I mean, need we go into detail from here on out? Lots of screaming, lots of blood, Denise's head tossed at the flames until the rest of the girls realize what it is, which is right when Barry and Lich come out of the darkness with a heavy sword and a screaming chainsaw, masks glistening and dripping. And then they're the only two left, our boys. Surrounded by what would take you a good while to realize are the remains of five high school girls. Arms here, legs there, heads rolling. It's like the fire had been built for them, the way they stand alongside it. The role was offered to them. And didn't they just kill it? Barry and Lich can't help but laugh. Out of breath. Filthy. They have their masks on still, playing out the role. They're not pathetic. They're not pinned down. They're Barry and motherfucking Lich. You see the van again, don't you? Tearing down Pine Mountain Road. They're passing around a joint and smoking it through the mouth hole in the Halloween masks. Stereo blasting. Wow, that was crazy, man. I know. Haha. Good joke. What's funny is that homecoming is next weekend and there's no QB1 for the game. Not as many cheerleaders as last week. But there's still going to be a dance and after parties that Barry and Lich won't be invited to. But maybe they'll show up anyway. Step through the gym's steel doors into an atrium of dangling ribbons, drifting balloons, couples slow dancing, and oblivious to how good these two got it. This week's top 40 hits playing over the rented PA as Barry and Lich enter like they're the main act of the evening, masks with a week's worth of filth clinging. Masks that haven't been removed even once since having been donned. A van still running in the parking lot as the door closes behind them. Barry and Lich, always ready to bring a good time.
We so hope you've enjoyed Barry and Lich by Stephen S. Schreffler, and genuinely hope you also enjoy this interview. I sat down with Stephen to talk about Barry and Lich, his upcoming novel through Dark Matter Inc., The Bleed, coming soon, his process, and a little bit of Star Wars for good measure. Stephen, thank you so much for sitting down with me today. Barry and Lich, as the last short story in Human Monsters, not counting the end cap poem, was just a dynamo to go out on.
Oh, awesome. Thank you for saying that. Yeah, I'm pumped to be here, and I was ecstatic to even be included in that anthology. There's a lot of great stories in there, so appreciate that.
Human Monsters as an anthology really had a very diverse array of monsters, but God, these kids were relatable though.
Well, that's good. I mean, I guess that's the idea.
I know you said that they put on some pretty messed up Halloween masks.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have masks in mind for them specifically?
Yeah, you know, I guess I did, but I didn't necessarily like, especially with it being a short story, want to like go too far into it. You know, maybe one of those things where you let a reader fill in what the scariest mask would be for them.
Oh, dang, you're right. Horror does live in ambiguity.
Yeah, I mean, the less you know, the better. It's not knowing that's scary.
I guess it lives on opposite ends of that spectrum, because there's like absolute ambiguity and hyper-specificity wig me out.
Yeah, no, that's probably true.
The boys came to life in so few pages. I felt like I went to school with these kids. You hit those relatable beats so quickly and easily with them. When did they spring to mind from an inspiration jolt? Have they been rumbling around in your brain for a while, or was it just like a light bulb moment?
Maybe they were there and then the light bulb exposed them, but I remember like when I wrote the story, was at a coffee shop or whatever. And I had no plans or anything. I had no idea what I was going to work on. I just had some time, and so figured I'd work on something. And so, you know, opened up a new document and immediately just started writing this. And, you know, other writers can probably relate to this, but sometimes a character comes up and introduces themselves to you, and you have this much easier job of almost just observing them and writing down what you observe, versus trying to, you know, force anything, I guess. But Barry and Litch were just kind of like that for me. And, you know, maybe a bit of a collage of a bunch of dudes that I knew when I was in high school. And once I started putting them in this van and what they were doing, you know, they really just kind of filled in the gaps themselves.
I don't know if you ever cast them in your brain at any point, but like, I could see a very young Jack Black as a dynamite Barry, though.
It's funny you say that, because that's sort of what I picture is like this, is like,
a oh, young, hell yeah.
Like a very young Jack Black. I could definitely see that for sure.
What do you think about Litch?
Man, Litch.
He was harder. I was, oh my God, what about like, I don't think I've seen a young Steve Buscemi, but like, I figure he'd be lanky, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe like a taller version of that. I don't know. Like, I haven't.
Yeah, just put him in a taffy machine, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there you go. I think that like with Litch, again, it's like a combination of people that I've known, like maybe just a caricature of different attributes. So I haven't really thought of, you know, we need like a tall, lanky dude. I don't know.
I'm sure they exist.
Yeah, I've heard rumors.
I know that you're a musician.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of music do you play?
Oh, man. I've been playing in bands for like forever. But typically just whenever people ask me that, I'm like, rock and roll, you know? It's the easy
Hell
answer.
Yeah. Up nod.
Yeah. I've been in bands that were much more like psychedelic rock, and versus, you know, other bands that have been more very blues, you know, almost classic rock vibe. And my current band is, someone described it as zombie rock.
Zombie rock.
Yeah. So I guess I'll go with that.
I can dig it.
Yeah.
Have you played Hades?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's kind of what I imagined when I heard zombie rock, but I think the composer for Hades described the vibe of the OST as Mediterranean Halloween prog rock. And I was like, yeah, that is it, Darren Korb.
That's a gift to be able to describe it so eloquently. Halloween, though, is a big inspiration behind the music that I'm playing right now. Just, you know, when Halloween comes around, like a lot of those, that music that you hear has, it's just using specific like half step intervals and stuff like that to give like a creepy vibe. So we associate that with like creepiness, but that shows up in the music.
Is that what does it?
Yeah, you know, like not resolving a chord, or, you know, using like a diminished or augmented note to create dissonance.
That's so interesting. I like, what, as a listener, I know that I feel uncomfortable sometimes listening to music, but I didn't realize it could just be because my brain expects a chord to finish a certain way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty cool. I mean, it's all kind of, I guess, psychological. And, you know, I actually relate a lot of the way that I do music to like the way that I write with horror. You know, it's kind of a similar thing, I guess, in my mind.
How so?
In music, to make like a diminished chord, for example, you might take like a power chord, which is a 1 and a 3 and a 5 note. That's a really common chord that you hear, like any AC/DC song, it's all power chords. But you might take like the 5th in that and slide it down one note. And that's how you create like a dissonance, or maybe the octave, and you take the octave and slide that down one note. So you're playing these two notes that are at odds with each other. So I think with writing horror, you can kind of do that same thing where you're taking a really familiar environment, high school or summer camp or something like that. And then you're adding tension to it and dissonance, I guess, to use that same word, by adding like unfamiliarity into that safety.
That is so fascinating. I love learning this kind of stuff about composing and sound design.
Yeah. And I think too, with like, you know, pop tune structure, like how you structure a song with an intro and a verse and a pre-chorus and a chorus, and, you know, when the pre-chorus comes in at what point in the song, there's a lot of parallels, you know, that make a good song something that you can just put on and blast in 3.5 minutes. And don't get me wrong, I love the 20-minute crazy psychedelic jams. But parallels with, you know, some kind of pulp type of horror or slasher.
So is your Halloween rock the kind of vibe that you're trying to strike for The Bleed?
I think The Bleed is more like a classic metal in my mind. I listen to music like nonstop while I'm writing. Sometimes it's just like ambient sort of stuff. But especially during more intense scenes, I would listen to like Metallica and Danzig and Slayer. Newer stuff like King Gizzard's metal albums and that kind of thing, kind of thrash stuff. I've got playlists for everything that I'm working on. If I'm going to work on something else, I'll put on the playlist for that. And I don't know, it just helps me get immersed more immediately.
I love that, because that is exactly what I do for TTRPG characters. Each one has a little playlist when I'm thinking about making their character sheets.
Oh, that's brilliant. It's funny because I do the same thing. I don't have a playlist, but I'll definitely put on like, what's the vibe? And like, I'll look for some music when I create characters. I used to play a lot more Dungeons & Dragons than I play now, but that's how I would come up with those characters.
Well, I was going to ask, because, you know, Barry and Lich, avid D&D players, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I figured you played as well, but I figured I should ask. Do you have like a favorite class?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because like, I really like spellcasting. I always want to start out like taking that to like the ultimate level as far as whatever made. Usually it's like a sorcerer or something like that.
Nice. You can get so much flavor with a sorcerer.
Totally. I also really love playing like a, you know, if we're doing like a one shot or like a small campaign, I really like monks and like fighting characters like that.
Ooh, four elements monks are pretty dirty.
See, I haven't gotten that far into the... We would start at level 1. Maybe that's a bad idea for one shots. I need to do like a level 20 one shot at some point.
I feel like I've done some level 5 one shots and they was pretty well balanced.
That's solid.
Because then you get like some of your special features. Like I always play warlocks because I want to play a spellcaster, but I can't fucking figure out spell slots.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, the spell slot thing is tricky. I originally would play warlocks, but I didn't like being beholden to a patron.
Ooh, and see, I love that. It's so juicy.
Really?
It's for drama.
Yeah, I mean, only. It is solid drama. But yeah, the spell slot thing, like, I was playing with a DM who explained it pretty well. I'm trying to remember exactly how he put it, but he equated it to, like, bullets. You have ammo for certain spells, and then you fire it off, and you can't use it until you rest and get your spell slots back.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. But then you have cantrips and things that you can cast, you know, infinitely.
I am a pretty visual person, so that actually did help.
Yeah, yeah, I'm visual too, so that might be why it connected.
People were like, no, it's just like you add together these slots and then you know how many slots you have. And I'm like, I didn't sign up to play this for more math, you guys.
Right, exactly. I mean, it gets tricky because then there are different abilities where you can combine spell slots or burn other things to create more, but they're temporary. But I think it's a pretty, how they pace it with leveling. Like, it definitely took me a couple playthroughs with a sorcerer before I understood it.
Did you have any, like, standout campaign moments?
Probably my character died, just went fallen and died. And then I created another one right there that was, like, very similar and sent him in. And then he died.
And in the same one?
Yeah. And I was
oh
like,
oh my God.
I was like, maybe I don't understand this.
Shit.
Yeah.
Death saves are brutal if they start going the other way.
Oh, I know. I know. It's fun. It's fun until it's devastating.
Yeah. I mean, two character deaths in one session is insane.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I was going to just come in, like, sort of bust down the doors kind of thing.
Because that's what heroes do.
Right, right. I think I went too hard in that kick down the door and then didn't have anything to, like, no survival plan.
Oh, God.
Pure vengeance.
Do you remember what y'all were fighting?
It's like a troll.
Oh, trolls are nasty.
Yeah.
They are just meat sacks full of HP.
Yeah, the regen, you know.
Oh,
like,
yeah, they heal every turn, don't they?
Yeah, and like...
Ugh.
You know, DM had a hot hand with those regens. Like, I'm like, are you serious? Like, my entire turn is just completely null.
Gross.
Yeah. 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 You know, worked out in the end. Character three made it.
Yes.
Three. So I don't think we've ever actually finished a campaign, though, to be honest. We kind of just play forever. And it's like, you guys want to start something new? It's like, sure. Someone else wants the DM.
I think I've only finished one campaign, yeah.
Yeah.
That's wild, actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah, but super fun. Like I said, I haven't played in a while. I miss it. I've been playing Baldur's Gate 3 to try and scratch that itch.
Oh my gosh, it's so good, right?
Super good.
Who's your party?
I'm like right in the beginning. I've got two girls and, you know, it's not something that can be on TV when they're around. I'm like right at the beginning with...
Shadowheart?
Yes.
Shadowheart is so great. I really love Lazelle. She's so mean.
I don't know. Is she the one from the beginning when, like, the...
Yeah, she's the Githyanki.
I was, like, really bummed to see that she wasn't there when I woke up on that beach. I mean, she knew what was going down, knew what to do. I'm just like, yes, man.
Mm-hmm. I didn't love how the introduction had a ship made of meat.
Oh, I love that. That's,
what are you going to do?
That's exactly the kind of thing that I love. Yeah, that was right up my alley. And mind flayers are like some of my favorite.
They're so cool.
Yeah, they're just really badass. I thought that whole thing was super rad.
Video game media outlets were like, why do people want to keep kissing these mind flayers? And they're like, I don't know. Have you ever played D&D?
Yeah. It's like, why not? Have you ever kissed a mind flayer? I might like it.
It's probably weird.
Yeah.
But, you know, nothing risked, nothing gained.
At the very least, you can say that you kissed a mind flayer, and that's some.
If you survive it.
Right. Good point.
Little Cthulhu faces.
Mm-hmm.
So what can you tell us about The Bleed? What would you pitch it as?
I guess I want to, like, describe kind of the history of trying to think about what the hell The Bleed would even be. Rom contacted me not too long after everything was set with Human Monsters. And he was like, hey, have you ever thought about novelizing Barry and Lich? Thought about it. And I was like, no, I haven't. So how would I do this? I mean, at the end of the day, my thought was like, you know, if you've read Barry and Litch, like, you know, kind of what happens with them, it'll be tough to kind of pick up where they left off for an entire novel. You know, I love these characters. And I want that side of them that people have seemed to connect with. I want them to be able to like hang out with those guys for longer.
That was something I yearned for a little bit as I was reading the story, because, like, I don't know, they just seemed like mostly good dudes in hard spots. Mm-hmm. And seeing them go like full villain mode is, in one respect, like, fuck yeah. And the other one, like, ah, shit.
Yeah. Same here. I was like, I was just getting to know you guys. I mean, the whole idea behind that story was to sort of create that sense of like conflict in a reader, where it's like, I really like these guys. It's like, where's that line of like, you're justified, but also you're not. And I think they found that line and crossed it pretty clearly. But, you know, at what point do you stop saying like, I get it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah. And so, you know, for that to work, you just have to have like two otherwise stellar dudes. So novelizing that, I definitely wanted to bring them back as the main attraction. I think that we did that with this. There's also a lot of other supporting characters that we meet, more of the folks that are in their D&D group and stuff like that.
Do we meet the narrator from Barry and Litch? Because the narrator felt like a character in their orbit that knew them, rather than like an omniscient force.
You know, I think that that narrative voice is not as strong maybe in the novel, but it is sort of just a stylistic thing of how I write in general. I just really like this vibe of storytelling. When you're reading, it feels like some, like, I leaned into it pretty hard with that short story of like, it feels like someone's telling you this story. But yeah, I mean, there's not necessarily a narrator, but I think that like there's an obvious connection with my writing voice in general that has some of that, where it's like almost fourth wall-y, you know.
I'm a sucker for that.
Yeah, I love that kind of thing. So as far as a pitch for the bleed, it's Barry and Litch's small town, and there are a series of pretty violent murders that begin popping out in an otherwise fairly quiet town. And Barry and Litch are more or less find themselves as suspects, and they're sort of on the run. So,
oh, very cool.
Yeah.
I know I'm excited to get my grubby little hands on a pre-release copy. No rush, though.
No, I'm excited too. I think a stark difference between The Bleed and maybe the short story, aside from length, is there's some definite sci-fi elements to The Bleed, whereas, you know, the short story is much more straightforward, sort of slasher.
I don't think that's a bad thing. I love layered genres as much as the next gal.
I'm probably as much of a sci-fi junkie as I am a horror junkie. So when it comes to filling out that many words, I just can't help myself. So
you draw from what you love, right?
Yeah, you should.
That is actually a perfect segue. Thank you very much for that. You had mentioned a while back that you were on a Star Wars podcast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I just I wanted to ask you a little bit about Star Wars, if that's cool.
Yeah, for sure.
So like, I'm always so interested to find out what draws people to the series, if it's like the Jedi mysticism, if it's like the Empire versus Resistance, or like the different kinds of aliens and like the cityscapes, tech stuff. What is your sci-fi draw?
You know, I first saw Star Wars like when I was a little itty bitty boy. I was immediately hooked from that opening scene in A New Hope, where Leia's ship, the Tantive IV, is being pursued by an Imperial Star Destroyer.
It's tense.
Yeah, like the way the Star Destroyer, I'm like using my hands.
Oh, I do that too all the time.
The way that the Star Destroyer enters the frame, like with that point, you know, the bow of it, and then it just keeps going and keeps going. My jaw was just dropping open. And I think that for me, the immediate draw, like as a kid, was the spaceships and the spaceships were all such cool designs, and the way that they would just pop in and jump off to another planet, like, it created a whole new fantasy for me.
They were very tactile spaceships too, I think. Like, some CG spaceships, I'm like, that doesn't exist. I don't have any connection with that. But I think the way that Star Wars used minis and, like, practical sets really set it apart in that sense.
Oh, totally. I mean, I'm, to this day, a huge fan of practical effects. But with Star Wars and the way that they used the minis and stuff like that, I think another cool side effect of that was I could get a toy that looked exactly like it and recreate those scenes or have my own.
Those action figures were amazing. My wife has tubs of them from when she was little. She's like, look, they all have the backs. So you know what they were. And I was like, well, I mean, you can see what they were. You have the action figure.
Yeah, my uncle had like all of the toys that came out when the movie was first released in 77. So whenever I go to like my grandparents, I remember discovering it, like this big bin of vintage Star Wars toys that worth a decent amount, I think, at this point. But yeah, so I get it.
For a kid, that's like unearthing sunken pirate treasure.
Oh yeah, for sure. And, you know, I saw some of the toys before I saw like Empire Strikes Back, which is tied for my favorite Star Wars movie. Seeing all of the like aliens and stuff, they actually really unnerved me, but it was
understandable.
Yeah, but it was like this like fascinated unease, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. That's like, I am such a horror pansy when it comes to movies. I can't watch scary movies at all. I will have nightmares for weeks.
Oh,
but
no.
I will, like, with morbid fascination, go to look up synopses.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, but what happens though?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I'm terrified of horror movies too, but for whatever I like that feeling of being terrified.
I come from a line of my mom like couldn't handle Jurassic Park, but
oh wow.
Damn, those practical effects there hold up. We just watched that again the other week.
Yeah, you know what's crazy is we just watched that here probably 2 months ago.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, and it totally holds up.
It's still good.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Undefeated as far as the Jurassic Park movies go.
I feel like some of those screams, like Laura Dern screaming in the back of the Jeep as they're going away from the T-Rex in the chase, like that is a soul-shattering scream.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That was real.
Oh, yeah. And she does it again when she goes to restore the power. And
oh, and the arm.
Yeah, and like the raptors there.
Actors that can scream with their soul bleeding out always impress me. And it is wild that one of those screams is in Home Alone.
Oh, Home Alone with Macaulay. Like, is it his scream?
No, it's it's one of our favorite Christmas movies. So we had it like on rotation this season.
Oh, I know which one.
But it's when they Marv gets the tarantula put on his face. I think part of that actor died while he was screaming. That's why we never see him in anything else.
There was like some real tarantula terror happening inside of him for sure.
That's a hard movie to watch as an adult. You feel the pain of the bandits much more acutely than you when you were a kid. My back hurt just waking up today. Look at what happened to them.
The slipping on ice thing, like that's like my nightmare. I hate that.
Are you in an icy zone?
Oh, yeah. It's icy right now. We've got a ton of snow coming in. So I slipped and fell on the ice for whatever reason as a kid, knocked out my teeth. And this happened more than once. So I'm like extra timid when it comes to stepping on ice.
I completely understand that. I went to school up in Erie, Pennsylvania, and it was just snow from September to May.
Yep, I know how that goes. That was my experience living in northern Michigan.
Circling back to Star Wars real quick, do you have favorite characters?
As maybe cliche as it is, Han Solo.
He's a scamp. He's a rapscallion.
He doesn't give a fuck. Even like 6-year-old me knew at that moment that like not giving a fuck was really cool. watching Han Solo.
Just like, look at him. He's so blasé.
He just takes the cake for me.
I know you said that Empire Strikes Back was tied for your favorite Star Wars movie. What is the other half of that tie?
Yeah, that would be Rogue One. It's so good. And I was very surprised. I don't know if it was just because it's not that I had low expectations. I probably just had no expectations. I'm cool with seeing a bunch of spaceships fly around and shoot each other. But I think any way you look at it, that movie is excellent.
It is. And I've only actually seen it once, and it was in theaters, but it was like one of those theaters that was like not quite an IMAX, but bigger than a regular one. And I was like, oh, this is a pretty important movie, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw that in IMAX and it blew me away, you know, especially how it leads right into A New Hope. The show that came out on Disney Plus, that one is also really good.
Oh, Andor?
Mm-hmm.
People keep recommending that to me and I keep forgetting to watch it.
It's very good. And actually, speaking of favorite characters, Andor is definitely got to be up there with them.
I really like in concept, it's more of a political intrigue show. We see some of that in episodes like 1 through 3. Palpatine is my favorite character, but specifically more when he's Sheev Palpatine. I don't know. There's something about that guy. He's just walking circles around everybody. And he does it, dude. Like he does what he set out to do.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's terrible, but like.
Well, obviously.
The wheeling and dealing on that guy.
Yeah. I mean, he knows what he wants and he knows how to get it done. That's for sure.
Sometimes I feel bad for Anakin, and then other times I'm like, you might have been able to see a couple red flags there, bud.
Yeah, I mean, Anakin, he never really grabbed me. I don't think there was any point where I was like, I love Anakin Skywalker. I hope the best for him, you know, except for probably when he was evil. Like that was, I was like, okay, I actually like this guy.
Yeah, he like let go of the weights.
Yeah, at least he's got like a sense of conviction.
Yeah, you know, he did stop being wishy-washy at that point because he didn't have the luxury to, I guess.
Yeah.
I passively watched a lot of the Clone Wars, and I really liked Anakin in that, actually. They gave him a lot more depth.
Yeah, I missed the boat on that series completely, and by the time I decided, I was like, I'm gonna like catch up on this and see what's going on, because I've heard it's a really good series, but it was not able to compete against all of the other things that demanded my attention.
That's totally fair. There's also like a lot of Clone Wars.
Right.
I've been heavily recommended to do like a watch order instead of going straight through, which makes sense because some of them are like way more kid focused episodes. And I'm like, eh.
Yeah, I found a Reddit thread somewhere that outlined like, here's this line, here's that. And I went at it that way. But yeah.
Have you ever played KOTOR?
I have, yeah. I loved that game when it first came out.
Dude, it's good, right?
It's really good. I think there was a remake.
Yeah, they are remaking it. Okay, I don't think it came out yet. Or maybe it did and it just slipped by me. I haven't been very observant with video game releases recently.
Yeah, same here. I know they were remaking it. I feel like if it was out, I would know.
That's BioWare, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're probably working on Mass Effect.
Ugh. The first Mass Effect I thought was really good, but man, that series kind of, it just didn't get any better. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I really like 2. 2 is my favorite, but 3 was kind of, there was a lot of wishy-washy stuff there.
Yeah, and Andromeda was just a complete mess, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think they were trying to do too much with like what they wanted to implement in Anthem rather than like what Andromeda needed.
Yeah, that could be. I just don't think it needed to exist in the first place.
Yeah, and they left like half the cool aliens I liked back on Earth for it. They're like, no, the Ark just didn't get there yet. And I'm like, oh, fuck off.
Yeah, it feels like a decision that was a creative decision that was made by a boardroom of executives.
Did you have a favorite squad member from KOTOR? I love finding out about people's video game parties. It's so fascinating to me because everybody has such different answers.
To be honest, when I played that game when it came out, and I probably didn't put down the controller until the credits were rolling, but I simply cannot remember anyone's name. I remember what a couple people looked like, and I just remember my warm and fuzzy nostalgia that I have for it.
Hey, man, that's all you need.
Yeah.
Reeling it back into Writing Town. What is your writing process? If you had a perfect day where you had no obligations, no distractions, what would your day look like to get started writing?
Oh, man. You know, as far as like what my writing process is versus the perfect scenario.
I guess that is a two-pronged question. Answer whichever one you'd like.
Well, every year I try to do like a writer's retreat, which really just means like me and maybe a couple writer buddies will get an Airbnb within driving distance that has like a cool view or something.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
Yeah. And then it's just like maybe three focused days of writing and sharing what we wrote and stuff. That so far has been like my ideal, which is really getting up, making some coffee, having a good think, spending hours uninterrupted writing, you know, with lunch breaks and stuff, almost like I would approach my job. The longer that I can stay in that world or with those characters, the better I think personally that my writing tends to be. Just being able to skip that, okay, what was I doing last time? Oh, yeah. Oh, okay, here it is. And then trying to find the thread.
You have to percolate on it.
Yeah, that would be my ideal, is like just almost treating it like a job. You know, alarm goes off, coffee goes on the pot. We're writing today. That's what we do.
Well, last question then. What is your ideal cup of coffee?
Ooh, it's funny. Any, like these days, it's all just like K-cups.
People not K-cups, but I used them in college and they were super handy.
It's very handy. I work from home and being able to just like walk over and immediately nuke a hot coffee is great.
Right.
But I really like some of the local coffee shops out here. There's some very good coffee shops that like roast their own beans and stuff like that. And I'll just go in and get a coffee black. And then sometimes, you know, depending on like what roast it is, I'll add a little bit of cream to it.
Nice.
Yeah.
I used to work as a barista at a roaster / coffee shop, and I swear I never smelled better in my life coming home from work.
But the roasting part of it, I imagine, it was like very hot and sticky.
It was good in the winter, though.
True. That'd be great.
Steven, this has been such a fun time. Thank you for sitting down to talk to me.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I had a great time chatting with you, Allie, and thanks for having me be a part of it.
I can't wait to hear these boys back in action. Listeners, thank you so much for spending your time with us for the season 3 premiere of the Dark Matter Magazine podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and review through the podcatcher of your choice. We'll be featuring reviews right here in the outro going forward to thank you for your time and effort. If you're craving more dark sci-fi and horror, please visit us at darkmattermagazine.shop to pre-order your copy of The Bleed, releasing oh so very soon through Dark Matter Inc. This podcast has been a production of Dark Matter Audio Lab, produced by Ali Nova and executive produced by Rob Carroll and Phil McLaughlin. See you next episode with a special interview with Izzy Lee to herald her new novel with Dark Matter Inc., I Can See Your Lies. Releasing February 13th. See you in 2 weeks.